This is Victoria, producer for The Felon File, a podcast on law enforcement history, issues, and incidents in the Appalachian Mountains of the United States and beyond. Listen to in 39 countries around the world. Scott Lunsford hosts The Felon File. Scott is a retired American police sergeant. Background and intro music through purpleplanet.com.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Felon File. And Victoria, we appreciate very much you getting us set up and running the control board for us again. As she said, I am your host, Scott Lunsford, alleged retired law enforcement officer, sergeant, researcher, writer, detective, SRO, and all-around wearer of many hats, if not too many hats. And we're coming to you today from the top of our mountain here in western North Carolina. We hope we have an interesting shade of blue story for you today. So no matter where you're listening from, be it the United States or one of the countries that tune in and listen to us, and if you are from another part of the world, we greatly appreciate you tuning in. Grab a friend, listen, and or spread the word around about The Felon File. We would greatly appreciate that. I was doing the editing on this particular shade of blue story we're going to talk about today. On June 16th, 2023, the day that I was editing this particular shade of blue story and doing some research on it, 50-year-old Robert Bowers was given the answer to the question of the consequences of his actions. The actions he had to answer for occurred in 2018 at a Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania synagogue. Bowers was the gunman who killed 11 people and injured 6 others during a mass shooting at the synagogue. By a jury, he was found guilty of 63 criminal counts, including hate crimes resulting in death. The shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue marked one of the deadliest hate crime attacks on Jews in U.S. history. The jury will decide in the weeks ahead whether Robert Bowers, 50 years old, will serve life in prison without parole or receive the death penalty. This will be a sentencing phase that occurs after the trial. Even though the jury deliberated for roughly 5 hours over the 2 days that they were given the case before coming to their verdict, Bowers' guilt was never really disputed, not even by his attorneys. It was pretty much cut and dry that he did it. Among his convictions were 11 counts of obstructing the exercise of religious beliefs, resulting in death, 11 counts of willfully causing bodily injury because of actual or perceived religion resulting in death, as well as 11 counts of the use of firearms to commit murder and a crime of violence. Before the attack, Bowers was known to regularly post his hatred of Jews on social media. As a matter of fact, he was doing so just minutes before the October 27th 2018 shooting. When he entered the synagogue with a rifle and 3 handguns, he yelled out, "All Jews must die." It's quite unfortunate that hate crimes have surged in number in the United States recently. Anti-Semitic incidents are reported to be at least 3,697 in the United States in 2022, a record level, unfortunately, a new high. Overall mass killing events are also on the rise, with the United States this year setting a new record for incidents where 4 or more victims, not including the assailant, were killed. According to the Associated Press, at least 57 were killed and 133 were injured in 38 U.S. mass shootings in May of 2023. Now, this is not a new topic in the world or in the United States. For example, August 13th, 1903, at a music concert in Winfield, Kansas. Quite a few people came out to listen to the music program of the 20-piece Winfield Military Band as they performed on the street and on a bandstand. 36-year-old Gilbert Twigg parked his wagon in an alley near the corner of Main Street and 9th Avenue there in Winford, Kansas. When the band called for intermission, the crowd, of course, began socializing among themselves, neighbors getting to talk to others in the community they hadn't seen for some time or had the opportunity to conversate with until just recently. At the concert, a small group of young men saw a man with a gun sneak into the concert area from a nearby alley. He wore dark pants and a khaki buckskin coat. Moving quickly with the intent not to attract attention to himself, he still moved with a confidence that even the young men noticed and later repeated and reported to be seen. The boys didn't see the gun right away or the look in the man's blue eyes as he observed and took in the crowded venue. The press in 1903 called it the largest ever assembled on the corner of 9th Avenue and Main Street. According to several of the newspapers that reported on the incident that followed, somewhere between 1,000 and 5,000 people had packed that intersection that Thursday evening. The town of Winfield was typical for its day. Stores of several sorts, bookstores, shoe stores, groceries, hardware stores, and other places provided the necessities of life there in 1903. Now, the band they had all come to hear was led by W. H. Kamen. And he had very good reason to expect a big crowd. That prior year, they had entertained similar crowds with brass renditions of pieces like The Cavalry Charge and The Comic Tattoo, coming off a successful trip to Washington, D.C., not too many days before the incident occurred. On the evening of August 13th, Kamen and his band started up well. There was no reason to suspect anything was wrong or any type of impeding catastrophe would occur. Back in the alleyway, the boys finally saw the man's gun. One or two might have known who he actually was. They might have heard their elders calling him Crazy Twig, or that guy that they sensed something wasn't quite right with him when they passed him on the street. But now the strange man, the town crazy, or the strange town guy that you knew you'd best not mess with, now he was focused on them, and it didn't take long before the man was soon upon them. He stared down at one of the boys and told him, "I'm going to do some tall shooting, son, and you had better run, as I have no desire to hurt you." Now the boy didn't run. Neither did the other young people, not at first. The man raised his double-barreled shotgun at that point and said, "I wonder if I can get Kamen," referring to the band leader. Hearing the band leader's name, several of the boys knowing him, and they quickly realized something terrible was about to happen, and it snapped them out of their trance. As a strange man dropped to his left knee, he pointed his shotgun loudly and said, "I'll kill every one of you." And that was enough for them. They took off running. As they were running away, shots rang out and confusion spread among the crowd. By the time it was over, it's estimated that the incident took less than 20 minutes from start to finish. Gilbert Twigg had become the first indiscriminate mass killer in United States history. He had acted without apparent motive and had killed whoever it was handy. It was something the country had never seen before. It would not see again for almost 50 years. Twigg had served in the armed forces and had brought his guns legally. He left a manifesto of 650-some words of a rationalization of what he had done. But as is typical of today's manifestos that are left behind, needed to put more light on why things happened the way they did, but it didn't really. Twigg wrote, quote, "You should let this be a lesson to you in the future. He wrote that near the end of his manifesto. Prophesizing and not missing it by very much. 6 were killed, including the shooter. He died either by taking his own life or being shot by the town's night shift police officer, a George Nichols. A rumor raised hours after the shooting that Nellerfer was fully resolved to the town's satisfaction was, did Twig take his life or did Officer Nichols take his life? 3 more individuals died from their wounds over the next few days. 25 individuals suffered injuries of varying seriousness. And it's difficult to compare how media covered the incident in 1903 versus similar incidents today. The vocabulary we use today to describe Twig's actions on that day differs significantly from how witnesses in the press told us what happened in the hours, days, and weeks after that occurred. Words like manic, deranged, demented, the terrible shock of the tragedy. Newspapers' favorite words to use to describe the incident. The concept of mass shooting was generally thought to be the realm of the battlefield, not the main public street in America, especially during a pleasant evening listening to music. The concept is that someone would plan and carry out a mass shooting just wasn't part of the common men's psyche. There is evidence Twig was not the first, though. It was a problem first of its nature, though. A Michael Stone, a forensic psychiatrist who studied mass shooting, references several incidents that occurred in 1857 and 1900. He's written some very thought-provoking points on the subject, and if you can find some of his papers, I would recommend reading them. Another incident called the first mass shooting, also known as the Mountain Meadows Massacre, was a coordinated series of attacks by members of the Utah Territorial Militia upon a group of immigrants from 4 Arkansas counties. 120 people died, while 17 children under the age of 7 were spared. Also, the April 11th, 1902 incident, where Will Reynolds, a 35-year-old African-American, killed 7 white men, including the sheriff and 5 deputies, in Tecumseh, Alabama. This in retaliation over an old warrant for his arrest. But then again, this was not a random attack. He had a purpose. Yet the Winfield Massacre, with the shooter seemingly choosing his victims or targets at random, is pretty much forgotten except for by the local populace of the town today. Was this 1903 mass shooting a possible look to our future for similar events? Well, you look at Colleen, Columbine, Tucson, Arizona, Aurora, Sandy Hook, Santa Barbara, Roseburg. Hundreds of innocent people are arbitrarily dead or injured because of the murderous actions of a man. And they are almost inevitably men, whose prior behavior ranged from slightly odd to dangerously worrisome, whose families may have sought help and run up against a mental health system that failed them. Now, who was Twig, the shooter of 1903? He was born in Maryland in 1867 after the Civil War. Around 1888, went with his family to Kansas. He worked as a miller and was ambitious, intelligent, agreeable, and reasonably good-looking. His most striking feature was described as unusually searing ice-blue eyes. Now, it appears he was a typical teen, too, at the time, even by today's standards. He worked, ran with a crowd of other young people, and dated a local girl. Eventually, proposing marriage, which was accepted, although it was a short engagement. The lady changed her mind and broke off the engagement. Why she broke it off really needs to be clarified or documented, but I can't find any reference or documentation as to why she broke it off. This was the issue that messed Twig up, though. "Those were the happiest days of my life," he would write to a friend. and it would have been much better for me if I had gotten married and settled down as you have. Undoubtedly, you are happy while I am not. Now, 2 years after the breakup in 1896, Twigg enlisted in the Army. He served 2 enlistments and was even promoted because of his marksmanship and his leadership abilities. He saw action in the Philippines, where some sort of issue or dispute with an officer and a doctor, a Lieutenant Bowditch and a Surgeon Woods. There are no documents also that I can find whatsoever on what this incident was over, only that it occurred. Whatever the issue, it bugged and nagged at Twigg for the rest of his life, right up until he died. He was mustered out of the Army in California as a sergeant with an excellent service record, lived briefly in Montana working as a miller before deciding to return home to Kansas in 1903. Being back home in Winford, he could not find work though, possibly due to his deteriorating mental health issues. Twigg hung around city parks or in a boarding house room when he could afford it. He was often heard muttering about town, about the people he thought had mistreated him, and those that plotted against him, as well as those who followed and kept him under surveillance, or so he thought. Little paranoia going on. The young people of the town began calling him Crazy Twigg. Finally, on August 1st, 1903, Twigg went up to the Winfield and Miller hardware store where he bought a shotgun, an inexpensive 12-gauge double barrel, a .32 caliber pistol, and more than 100 rounds of ammunition. And he spent the next several days practicing with both of the weapons. On Tuesday, August 13th, he was ready. At 9th Avenue, he stopped in front of the shoe store, inside of the bandstand about a block away. That's when he opened fire with the shotgun, like we talked about when the young boys ran off. Twigg's first shot grazed a horse who took off running. The second shot passed through the shoulder of the band's drummer. One of the brass players had his instrument shot out of his hands while he was playing. Twigg then turned his attention to the crowd. 3 men were hit as they exited the street from the stairway leading to the Oddfellows Hall. A group of 3 women were also hit, as well as a 15-year-old boy. Bodies littered the street as Twigg continued firing on the scattering crowd. Some were running, some holding wounded arms or limping on broken legs or trying their best to crawl away from the chaos. Twigg would drop to 1 knee at each shot. After shooting, would retreat backwards while reloading. Then he had dropped back to his knee and fire again. Basically military skirmish line tactics that he had learned in the Army. This action gave Twigg a level body line with each volley of lead that he shot. This tactic makes each shot more deadly. Then say just opening up fire and shooting randomly. He had remembered his training and shot low. Twigg worked his way back to the alley in his wagon. His last 2 shots were fired as he leaned around the corner. He then grabbed his .32 caliber pistol from the wagon and turned it on himself. And as we said earlier, a rumor has persisted in Winfield that Twigg did not shoot himself, but was in fact killed by Winfield policeman George Nicholas, Winfield's first, and at that time, only African-American policeman. Now, the rumor that he had shot Twigg cast Nichols as a ready-made hero who ended the town's most incomprehensible nightmare. But the town was forced to deny his role as a hero because it was considered too dangerous for a black man to have actually killed a white man, even justifiably. This was 1903. At the inquest, Nicholas stated he was standing by the store when the first shot was heard. He ran north towards the shot to 9th Avenue, where the second 2 shots were fired. Nicholas secured his Winchester rifle and ran down the alley as he had been told the shots were being fired from there. He went until he saw Twig leaning against a telegraph pole. Stopping about 40 steps away from him and aiming his rifle, Nicholas watched as Twig fell to the ground and heard him groan heavily. He watched him there for a minute or so, covering him with a rifle to make sure that he was down. Nicholas had a Winchester rifle and a 44 caliber Colt revolver with him. He soon approached the body and confirmed that Twig was dead. Nicholas continued to deny throughout his career and his life that he shot Twig. The morning after the shooting, police searched Twig's boarding house room. They discovered a letter blaming unspecified individuals in the world for his troubles. It's always somebody else's fault, right? I would like to say to those who have interested themselves so much in my welfare, that seems to be the public in general, he wrote, that I do not, and most likely never will, know the real cause of being treated in the manner for which I have been treated. You know, you have duped me. Until I was forced to give up about a $100 a month position. You know that you drove me from place to place and forced me to give up a neat little sum of my hard-earned money to railroad companies and money that I went through the danger of war and disease for. You also know that you have read my mail. After finding out my friends and correspondents, you told them a story about me that caused every one of them to drop me and turn me down cold. Was the cause of this persecution, he wondered, my girl affair here some 8 or 9 years ago? He also stated that he regretted that, quote, I did not settle this thing with Lieutenant Bowdish and Surgeon Woods while I was a patient in the Philippines. Then I could have gotten what was due me, and this thing would never have happened and would have been over long ago. You can find a lot of parallels to what Twig wrote, what Twig did, and the community's response to it. There is definitely failures of mental health treatment for Twig. Was he suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder from his times in the Philippines, fighting in the jungle there? The final answer, I guess, we'll never know. I think he kind of summed everything up pretty good. Where Twig wrote, you should let this be a lesson to you in the future. Will we take the situation to heart? Was he foretelling what was going to be our future? Possibly. That's one of those situations we will never know whether it's true or false. But we can look at our future and our present. If you know somebody that is in need of some mental health help, let somebody know. Try to help out as much as you can. Try to be there to support them. It can be very important. Well, that's our Shade of Blue story for this week. I hope you found it interesting. In our comparison between 1903 and today, remember to come back in 2 weeks for another episode of Felon File. And if you'd like to drop us a line, you can reach us at felonfile@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Or you can check out the websites, felonfile.com or scottlunsfordauthor.com. You can connect with us from links at those locations as well. We'd love to hear from you, either with ideas or comments and opposing viewpoints. That's what it's all about. In the meantime, till we get together again, if you have the opportunity to help somebody out, step up and do it. It's really the right thing to do. And if more people did it, the world wouldn't be as screwed up as what we've got right now. It's really the right thing to do. Also, remember to be safe and be secure in your life and what you're doing. And we'll talk again on the next episode of The Felon File. Victoria, go ahead and close us out. You've got the control panel. Bye, y'all.
Unfortunately, the danger continues. Being reported today, on June 18, 2023, three new incidents have occurred. A mass shooting near a shopping center in Willowbrook, Illinois, early Sunday left at least 20 individuals shot and one dead, according to DuPage County Sheriff's Office. Witnesses told local news outlets that what was supposed to be a celebration of Juneteenth turned into chaos when gunfire started. The second incident, like the 1903 Shade of Blue story you just listened to, involved a shooting near a music festival in Washington State, the Beyond Wonderland Electronic Dance Music Festival. At least two people dead, and three others, including the suspect, were wounded on Saturday night, according to the public information officer for the Grant County Sheriff's Office. After the initial shots were fired, the shooter then walked away from where the incident happened, and the suspect continued to randomly shoot into the crowd before law enforcement took him into custody. The third incident occurred at Juneteenth celebration in downtown Asheville, North Carolina, almost in our backyard. According to a press release from the Asheville Police Department, officers responded to reports of shots fired in the downtown area of Court Plaza around 8:51 p.m. on June 17, near the Juneteenth Festival. Court Plaza is between the Buncombe Courthouse and the Asheville Police Station, where Scott worked for over 30 years. Two juvenile victims were found with gunshot wounds and transported to the hospital. According to the press release, one remains in critical but stable condition as of Sunday afternoon. Two suspects have been taken into custody. One has been charged with two counts of felonious assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, inflicting serious injury. Remember, as Scott likes to say, please be safe and secure. And please be careful. This has been The Felon File, a discussion on law enforcement, history, issues, and incidents in the Appalachian Mountains and other parts of the world. For more information, you can go to felonfile.com or scottlunsfordauthor.com. Here you can find links to Scott and Numb books and other information. You can also email us at felonfile@gmail.com. There are also t-shirts and mugs available. You can also buy us a cup of coffee, or help purchase some of the research material and expenses it takes to do Felon File. Click on the coffee image on the webpage to do so. This is Victoria, your producer. Thank you for listening. Have a good one.